Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Ashwini.
Hey, Bob. Good evening.
And I have an announcement, unless you have something you want to get us started with?
Nope.
Great. Meditation is one of the most effective ways to train the attention to be with present moment experience. Join Sangha for our virtual meditation groups, conference call meditation sessions that take place 7 days a week. For more information about this and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Ashwini tonight, press star 6, then 1 to make a show and get in the queue. And just a reminder to try to keep the conversation on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes is great. All right. I think we're ready for our first caller, Ashwini. First caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Chris in Three Rivers, California.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you doing? Good to hear your voice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was having some speaker trouble. Oh, my goodness. Just kind of relaxing into the moment as I sort of rushed home in order to get in the queue, and just so grateful, so thankful for a practice, and just wanted to call and just for the heck of it, and just see what I'm really been having fun with is that the tuning into the frequency of goodness, you know, that, or however it was said not too long ago. And it's just been so fun practicing with that. And so it seemed like the thing to do, to call.
Mm-hmm. Yes, just tuning into goodness, right? There we are. We're in the midst of our daily lives. And then just that fun of tuning into the moment or being here or being with Sangha. It's just fun to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. And so it's been really fun just practicing with that, you know, all throughout the day and night, and just trying to go with intuition or that still, small, quiet voice or feeling, or, you know, and then just seeing where it leads, you know. Like I think Sherry had mentioned not too long ago something about she gets this feeling that the car needed oil changing or something like that, and just experimenting with it, like just saying, okay, well, is that authentic? Is that, where is that coming from? How does it feel different than, you know, just the conversation, or just having, just playing with it and really enjoying that, mm-hmm. and seeing these old little miracles that just are little, you know, cool things that happen by tuning in, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that lovely Zen story that Sherry talks about, right, with her old car, that it would always drop in to check the oil. Now, whether or not the oil needed changing was irrelevant. It's whether or not I listen to that voice, pay attention to it, and do what it says. And when I do what it says, I get a sense of what life has, what life will reveal to me when I'm there for it. And so for you, it sounds like tuning into that still small voice has allowed you to experience all kinds of interesting little miracles.
Yes, and just being helpful and being available and enjoying it, you know, and just being happy and being so so happy to not be caught in the really serious cycle I was in of drinking and smoking and just really, really miserable, and
yes,
just what a difference life is, you know, when we're here for it, or, you know, as much as possible.
That's right. That's exactly right. So the difference between being in a really dark place, in that tortured place of the dark room with all those voices coming at you and having to cope with it in ways that are not healthy, and then being able to redirect the attention and actually be here for the still small voice, to find yourself in the light room it's such a different experience.
Mm-hmm. And it's just so different now. I mean, and, you know, everything changes and there's cycles and ups and downs, but it's like my sitting practice has really changed, and I'm doing it because I want to, not because I feel like I should. And just, you know, just really trying to listen to my body and you know, just being so thankful and so happy that I'm still alive to practice and to enjoy life and to be of service and to, you know, just call in and say hi.
Yes. Well, and, you know, Chris, it's so important to call in in those times of darkness and seek guidance and then receive the guidance, especially when we're in the midst of whatever we're going through, whatever that challenging difficulty is, and we make that choice to end suffering, right? We reach out, we do the practices, and then we find that change happening, right? We're in the light room now, and there's such gratitude for this practice, for this life, for being alive to be here for it, right? And so then the thing that you said is so important, that the there are undulations, and we might find ourselves slipping and going back into dark places, but we're in the process of training ourselves to do the practices regardless of the good times or the bad times, so that it serves us regardless wherever we are.
Yes, and it's just so fun to feel, you know, trustworthy and honest with my commitments, with myself, with others, and you know, it just builds upon itself. Where, you know, it's not about how I feel like it. If I feel like doing it, I don't feel like doing it. It's like, you know, the whole thing just you know, about changing behaviors, and you know, sometimes
feeling
I guess
successful.
It's just, you know, Yeah. And it takes whatever it takes. You know, it felt like I was on the brink of, you know, death, the door. And we all are, right? I mean, in a way. But it really felt purposeful, you know, like... And so anyway, just feeling just so full of gratitude and so connected to life, to Sangha, to all the practices, to the yearly retreat, and just really, really so grateful and so thankful.
Well, thank you for calling in and letting us know that you're in the light room.
Yes. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Chris.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Chris. And I love a conversation, Ashwini, because I think it's just a huge benefit to me, like when I call in the dark times and when I call in when the not dark times, because it's anytime I'm kind of being open and willing to process and to get guidance, I'm directing my attention back here. It's very hard to stay identified in a practice conversation.
Precisely. It's very hard to stay identified in a practice conversation. And it's just such a modeling, right? Because the invitation of practice is not just that we're calling about insights. We're also calling when we are stuck. And it takes such extraordinary courage to be that vulnerable and that open, as you said.
Yeah. And that in and itself is a modeling, right? So anytime someone does that, I'm like, oh, that's something that we do. And that's something that's part of, you know, what is encouraged is to always be in that a place of, you know, raising our hands and gashoing to be called on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, precisely. Participating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. All right, I'm going to bring on our next caller. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Ashwini and Bob, this is Jeff in Squim.
Hi, Jeff.
Jeff.
Hey. Well, I just arrived last night and got to participate today for the first time in the Summer of Sangha. What a gift.
What a gift. And you arrived in showery Squim rather than sunny Squim, Jeff.
Yeah,
it looks like the weather is
going
to clear up for you soon.
Well, there was both today. We had a little bit of rain and some sun as well. Just a few things about the experience today. One is that it's different to meditate with Sangha than it is to meditate alone. Mm-hmm. And it had been so long that it was like, mm-hmm. oh, yeah. Wow, you know, I'm not sure I can say a why, and I don't need a why, but there's just something about meditating with other people who are meditating.
Yeah, and we don't have to say why, right? It is completely it. There is a togetherness that is palpable. Mm. Yeah.
In the silence.
And it's in the silence and in this particular meditation hall, right, which is so organic and so alive with birds and wind and rain, all of that. Yeah. It's so elemental.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like it. I really like it. It's great. You know, it's right there in the field, right by the woods. Another thing I saw during after a guidance appointment, and I've been practicing with, I had the suggestion, not so long ago to, make peace with death. And, so in practicing with that and after the guidance appointment, I saw that I was even trying in meditation. There was a trying to stay with the breath. And that could sound like, well, yeah, that's what we're doing, but it was like there was a, you know, I was trying to have a certain result. And so when I saw that, there was the letting go of that and being with the breath. And that, mm-hmm. I don't know if the difference is in what is coming through in what I'm saying, but the first was not enjoyable. And the second that was being with the breath, that is very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That efforting of any kind is actually a separation.
Right.
From the moment.
Yeah.
And so to notice that's what was happening in meditation is so helpful. And then there's a way in which we train ourselves to redirect the attention from efforting to just noticing, to being with.
Right, exactly. There was an I trying. And yeah, so, and I went in, you know, it seemed like after that there was going in and out of it. So it's just something to practice with, though I'm practicing it right now, just, you know, no agenda, no trying to make anything be any way at all, but mm-hmm. what is right now, this is the only moment.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, and it's an interesting and very nuanced place. I think we were looking at it this morning on the morning show as well, right? Jeff, so I don't know that I'm attempting to make an effort. And then it drops in that that's what's going on. And then we attempt to, it's like the, when I'm awake and I'm trying to sleep is the best way to, is the best route to staying awake, right? And so,
yes, it's so funny.
And yet, there is a process that we engage in of letting go that allows for that place of being with. So we have to practice as if our hair is on fire, knowing that that very practice is probably keeping us from what we're seeking. But we still have to practice. And so we are just working with that all the time, right? That recalibration to a way of being doing or doing being or however we want to say it that bypasses the default way we do anything, which is usually through a conditioned orientation.
Yeah, it seems to me it's not, it doesn't seem to me like a doing. It seems to me a training of the attention, but that could even sound like a doing. It's a being of the attention. I don't even know how to say it without it sounding like a doing, but it's, you know, it's kind of being.
Mm-hmm. Well, we go back to, we don't have to say anything. I think it's the whole, it's the sermon of the flower. I project that everybody who has had that experience knows exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the non-doing in a way. It's just, yeah. So anyway, really grateful to be here. It's really great to practice. There's so many different elements of it. And it's new and different and the same time, you know, because it's just a new center and a new format and everything. And then it's still, you know, anyway, it's so great. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Bob.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, Jeff. And Ashwini, I was going to say that I'm jealous of everyone up there at Scrim right now. And I know there's an invitation, but I think it's not really jealousy because I was listening to some of the recordings and it was just, I don't know if it was just heart-opening or heartwarming just to hear people talking in group at the Zen Center again. Just something about that is just, and I don't know what it is, but it is a unique experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and some of the discussions we've been having, right, Bob, are just unbelievable. And as just like Jeff was saying, that it's such a different experience to meditate together palpably in one room. There's a palpable sense of togetherness. That quality of what happens in group when all of us are sitting together day after day after day having a conversation, like in the retreat experience when the practice deepens, it is. As you said, heartwarming, heart opening. And it feels like we're participating, right? We're in it.
Yeah, yeah. And what just came into me as you were talking is like it's everyone sitting together every day. It's everyone practicing together 24 hours a day in that environment that I think really leads to those discussions, I hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or I suspect.
Yeah, exactly. And fortunately, all of us, given the technology we have access to that. If we wanted to participate because we couldn't physically be here, we could still have the experience of being with as that's unfolding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Ashwini. We're going to break now for a good news update, and then we'll come back to talk to more callers.
Thank you, Bob.
And Jen, I believe you are now live.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. And welcome to Good News Updates. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Tony, who is here to speak with us about exactly what was just being talked about, insights and awarenesses happening during the summer of Sangha. Welcome, Tony.
Thank you, Jen.
Thanks for being with us.
Yes.
So, One of the parts of Summer Sangha has been working meditation, and I understand that as you have been going about and doing tasks and that sort of thing, that you've had some fun insights around a way to use recording and listening with that.
Yes, yes. And some of this was doing this before I came to Squim.
Okay, great.
Uh-huh. And it's a practice that has, I want to say, saved me. It has been so beneficial. There's been times when I would be working on something, maybe it's something creative or taxes even, There's things that there's a
slightly
lot
less creative. Uh-huh.
Yes, yes. And there's things that either, you know, like with creative things, there's been a tendency for there to be a fair amount of criticism and self-hate that comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And then with taxes, it's like, oh, it's so dreadful, and there's a lot of resistance, and uh-huh. hard to get. It's kind of a slog. So what
right.
I
so, so with, resistance showing up in different ways in those situations.
Yes. Yes.
But resistance nonetheless. Uh-huh.
Yes. Yes. And I had heard about heard some people talking about they would just turn on the recorder while they were doing something, and they would just talk. And so I started doing that with, especially with, first with creative projects, because that's where there's been so much self-hate. And it is so transformative. I mean, it makes it, it tends to keep self-hate out while I'm doing the activity.
Yeah. And so if I'm tracking, Tony, you're literally you're pressing record as you're doing the activity. You're literally talking out loud as you're doing the activity.
Exactly. Yeah.
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 I just put the phone down, I hit at record, and I just start
uh-huh.
talking.
I love it.
Yeah.
Very much like we were talking about in group today, and we talk about a lot, where that strategy of, if you're reflecting someone in your head as they're talking, that voice has a much harder time getting in there. Same thing,
mm-hmm.
same principle here, right? You're recording out loud, essentially. I mean, let's face it, if you're thinking, if you're turning on the recorder, you're with life, you're with the mentor, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yes.
that's what's yes. going on. And so the voice doesn't have nearly the access to you as it would otherwise.
Exactly. It's like, so as soon as I hit record, even just putting the, because I used to do this on my phone, just having the phone there and hitting record, already it's like I associate the phone and recording with mentor. So already I feel not alone.
Yeah.
And there's,
right.
you know, I see the phone, it's like that just that message is of support. You're not alone.
Yeah.
Here's support. And I look at it, they're kind of like conversations with the mentor. So I'm just going along
uh-huh.
and like, what did I do here? And just this putting out there whatever I'm seeing, experiencing,
yeah.
and it's been really amazing. The what comes back, you know, it will be sometimes very practical suggestions. It's encouragement. It's like, you're doing great. Look what you're doing.
Yeah.
This is really good. I just love what you're doing. I'm so happy.
So different, right? So different
yeah.
from what you describe is the habitual thing. But, you know, it just, as you're talking, Tony, it just strikes me so much that there you are essentially saying to life, I'm completely available, life. And then in comes life, right? Great! Oh, we have access to Tony. You know,
uh-huh.
we've been wanting to tell her how fabulous this is, these projects that she's working on, and to support her in the taxes and show her that it doesn't have to be miserable. So you're
yes.
really putting yourself, in a sense, in the line of fire of life's companionship and kindness. And, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I love that companionship because, that's so touching because it's the being alone and, like, I don't know what to do and the
yeah.
self-hate comes in. But to have that buddy, that companion that's right there listening, anything I have to say, there's no standards, no requirements, no expectations. I can say whatever and just that. Yeah, that companionship, I'm not alone, and there's support and encouragement and guidance comes through,
yeah.
suggestions.
Yeah, yes, right. As you said, sometimes in very practical ways, you know, a suggestion to try this or that, and probably in other forms as well.
Yes, because there's it was taxes. So it's like, oh, God, you know, I don't want to do this. It's so tedious. It's, you know, but I have the phone down and I start talking and then I'll be like, oh, God, I just and maybe I'll set the timer. I'm going to work on this 15 minutes. And then it's like, you know, I still have 5 minutes to go and I'm already worn out. The mentor might suggest, well, you know, it'd be okay. You could just go outside for a moment. Take some deep breaths. Get a drink of water. You know, you don't have to, like, push until, you know, over the edge. It's just, you know, lots of encouragement and practical ways to support myself in doing things that are sometimes really difficult.
And what a perfect illustration there of how I project the voice would make it into a contest, right, in order to make you miserable. I mean, that's how it's going to make you miserable. You sit down to do it. You say, okay, I'm going to work on it for 15 minutes. And then you start to watch the misery build. And the voices would say, well, no, you said 15 minutes. You have to, that's it. You got to nose to the grindstone, right? And the mentor suggests, how about just standing up? How about just going outside for a moment? And, of course, what that's going to do is it's going to break up that misery that is very likely happening in some kind of unconscious conversation that we can't see. We're being kept miserable, and the mentor suggesting, hey, let's break that up.
Yes. Yeah, it's much like when we're doing self-guided and working meditation, to stop, set the alarm for every 15 minutes, and then go look at something beautiful that happened the other day. And it's like totally transformed everything. And then I go back and I'm perfectly happy doing what I'm doing.
Right. Yes. And that's a great point about the benefit of there's a lot of self-guided practice in the schedule for the Summer of Sangha. Times when we have an assignment or we're doing weeding pulling meditation or we've got things that we're attending to, and then we get to practice with them as we go through it. And I think it's one of the things that you're pointing at and that many people have said in the Summer of Sangha, that one of the benefits of this format is that there's a way in which there are these very practical ways that we realize that our entire lives can be within practice. That sometimes when there's this sort of, okay, retreat's over there and my life's over here, we forget that it doesn't have to be that way, that it really is all one thing.
Yes, that's been so my experience. Yeah, and just so much support for not having to look to conditioning. I love that came up recently. The structure of working meditation is we don't have to look to conditioned mind for what to do or how to do it.
Right, right. That's the design of it is so that we don't have to do that, so that we're supported. This is a situation, it's almost like a training ground, a classroom. This is a place where we can learn how to not look to conditioned mind, to look to life.
Yes.
And, you know, Tony, it strikes me that that's essentially the practice you're describing. That's what you're training to do in that practice. Instead of to be in the conversation looking to conditioned mind, you're looking directly to life by turning on that recorder and speaking out loud.
Exactly. And I can't say enough the difference. Because then sometimes I'll think, okay, well, I'm just going to, I don't know, paint for 15 minutes. I don't need to record. You know, I'm just going to do this quick little thing. And then self-hate can still come in. Criticism can still come in. So it just has made a tremendous difference for all kinds of things, activities, any activity.
Yeah, really, really fun. And I project that many of us will take inspiration from you and reinvigorate, bring that practice out again, because I'm right with you. It's really a powerful and helpful tool. And thank you for being with us to talk about it today, Tony.
Thank you so much, Jan. Thank you. Gesho.
All right. Gesho. And Bob, we'll turn it back over to you and Ashwini.
Thank you, Jen. And thank you, Tony. And Ashwini, at the end of that conversation, I was thinking, well, I need to get myself to SQIM because that sounds like a great place to be in terms of practice.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Bob, you're so welcome. And I just want to echo what Sherry said on the morning show, that whoever has any misunderstanding that they're not invited, it is a misunderstanding. Everyone is invited and welcome.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. And the thing that really struck me about that conversation is just, I don't know, just how vibrant practice is when you're at the Zen Center, and there's just so much support for, doing practice, for being, really clear when you're in the midst of something, what actually is center and what is conditioning, and where to turn for support when it isn't clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right, Bob. Presence is in itself vibrant, but somehow doing it with Sangha at the home hub, it's a totally different experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, just let us know when you're going to be here. We'll roll out the red carpet.
Great. All right, and I'm going to bring on the next caller here. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
This is Celia calling in from Seattle. Hi.
Hey, Celia.
Hey. So I'm been getting so much out of each of the conversations that they all seem aimed at me tonight. And I'd like to... I've been having a very hard time, actually, after several months ago, sort of really adding more practice and doubling up on things I was already doing, sitting, and made a commitment to a retreat that I haven't been to in many years. And I think I heard a phrase that was said tonight that I think kind of addresses what I'm finding hard now, and that's I've made this new commitment to, for instance, more sitting, and just struggling with that. And one of the callers talked about how sitting had become more enjoyable, just his experience changed into one of enjoying rather than an effortful thing. And I'm really finding myself kind of dropped into a sort of an abyss here.
And so,
not enjoying.
Well, I don't know if this is your experience, but we talk about it in practice all the time, that the more we are determined to practice, the more the conditioned system escalates, right? Because mm-hmm. it's under attack. And so we relax into expecting that as we deepen our commitment to practice, ego will resist more. So that's just the giving,
mm-hmm.
right? And sometimes just having a framework like that or hearing people's experiences of the truth of that allows us to go, wait a second, there's nothing wrong with my experience, which is really what you're closing in on, right? That it would be fine if you just added another commitment and were able to go from one commitment to the other without any problem. But if ego is escalating also, there's some kind of wondering whether there's something wrong with my experience that I'm struggling.
Uh-huh.
But if we drop the something wrong, then we're just with the experience, whatever the experience is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I forgot
I
what the caller was pointing to. Go ahead.
No, I just... you use the word relaxing into knowing that that's going on, and that was a good phrase for me.
Yes, yes. Because the first of all, spiritual practice isn't easy, right? Nobody said it was. If it was easy, more people would be doing it. So it is. We're going up against lifetimes of conditioning in order to get here. So it's a very worthwhile pursuit, but it's not an easy one.
Mm, It's nice to hear you say it's worthwhile, because you're right. It's just fraught with doubts about what have I just totally missed the boat here.
Well, and that goes to the second point, which I think we were looking at with the first caller or second caller or whoever, which was simply that what we realize when we pay attention to the process is that there's some kind of expectation of an outcome. So if we're not aware of it, it's like if I sit, I'm going to be enlightened. Or if I sit, life's going to become easier. If I sit and I sit often, it should get easier. If I sit, maybe my mind shouldn't wander. Maybe I should be able to sit for 30 minutes and be able to count my breath from 1 to 10 throughout the entire 30 minutes without my attention wandering, right?
Yeah.
What we get as we do the practice is that that's part of what causes us to suffer, is that we're sitting with expectations. That's why, you know, Zen masters of old would say, just sit. But just sitting is not helpful if we don't understand that there is a force that is in opposition to us being present. And part of the way that force operates is to constantly say, whatever's going on now, there's something wrong with it. So if I'm sitting, what's wrong with my sitting? Well, I've been sitting for years and years and years and years now, and you're still not doing it right, because if you were, why haven't you awakened yet?
Yes. Yep. And of course,
go ahead.
Yeah, the other interesting thing is that in my exchanges with people, there have been wonderful shifts, but practice things, oh my God,
give me an example
against the boulder.
Give me a very concrete example.
Say again?
Give me an example.
Of what?
Of the pushing and... So it seems like that what you're saying is there's been a shift in interactions with people, but with practice things, and you said, so give me an example of what's going on around practice things.
At first, after I made the commitment for more sitting, it was kind of smooth sailing, and now one of my commitments is to sit later this evening with a particular group, and it's like, oh my God, it's like where's the potato chips, you know? It's I gotta get away from this. I'll just read, or I'll just watch a movie or something. And my husband just walked by my window, and I went, oh well, there's an excuse, you know. So it's that.
And do you have a sense, Celia, whether that resistance is to sitting with the group or just to sit? I mean, is it against the commitment or is it the form of the commitment?
Oh, that's an interesting question. It may have something to do with the form, yes.
Okay, right. And so there's that very that place of, so you know, we can whip ourselves into getting up and going and keeping the commitment, but if what we're practicing is conscious, compassionate awareness, being whipped into meditating isn't really achieving the objective, right? So I notice the resistance, and so then I look at it and go, well, what would be kind? Am I tired? Is there somebody who really doesn't want to get dressed and go out there and socialize with a bunch of people and practice meditation in a group? So what if I can just look to see if I want to sit at home for 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Right? So there's a kindness factor that we might bring to it, and an inquiry factor, which is why I asked the question. So is there resistance to sitting, or is there resistance to the form that of the commitment in the moment? And so then we get to play with it. So we get to see, we can set up a structure that says, okay, I have made a commitment to sit, and sometimes I go up against resistance, and that might just be, you know, ego throwing a hissy fit about how present I want to be, or how, or whatever. And or it could be that this particular structure is not working or kind to this human being. So how do I create a structure that takes it out of the hands of ego? Well, maybe for a week I change my sits up. So if I've committed to sitting three times a day, maybe I sit three times a day, but sit for different lengths of time. Maybe one of my sits is in the garden next to a tree. Maybe if I find out whether it's the form of the sit that is what's creating the resistance. So maybe I sit at home today and really find out whether I enjoy that more.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I think part of it is I feel like I'm sort of straitjacketed into the sits
right.
that I've committed to. They're longer, much longer than I had been sitting. And,
Well, we don't want to lose sight of why you're sitting, right, Celia?
Yeah.
I mean, you're sitting in order to be present, to enjoy the moment. Yeah. So there's always there's an important thing we navigate in practice, right? We're trying to be trustworthy people. So if I decide to make a commitment to practicing presence, ego will come in and resist. That's just a given. In fact, the structure that you're talking about, where initially there's tremendous enthusiasm, there's tremendous success in keeping the commitment, and then ego erodes that, and then we find ourselves not keeping the commitment and then feeling bad that we didn't, we're not disciplined, and then making a commitment again and going through that entire cycle. So knowing that that cycle is an ego cycle is a good thing, because we know when there's enthusiasm and we know there's an erosion by ego of our commitment, and then we hit a plateau, and then we hit, okay, it's not happening anymore. That is the setup of suffering around commitment. And so in order not to fall for that, there's a non-negotiable commitment structure. It doesn't matter whether I feel like it or not, I'm going to sit, right? And so then we become trustworthy people who, regardless of ego voices, keep our commitment. Then we graduate from keeping our commitment as a way to transcend ego to getting to the place where I want to sit. I want to sit because I enjoy spending time with life, enjoy spending time with me, enjoy spending time with the moment. So now I have to create a structure of enjoying sits, not just getting to the cushion.
Wow. Yeah. I'm kind of dumbfounded.
It's always a progression.
The whole idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is why it's good to be in guidance, right? Because what the way conditioning approaches practice is, you should do it. It's going to be difficult. I'm going to make it really hard. So you're going to quit, and it's a contest, right?
Uh-huh.
And that's the sum total of how spiritual practice works. But it's a progression. We keep training, and what we're training with is different. Is different at different parts of our practice journey.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah.
So if you can sit regardless, and now you know that if you make a commitment to sit, you're most likely going to keep it, even if you're struggling with it. then maybe your training structure becomes, how do I make my sit more enjoyable? And that's, then you get on the recorder with a mentor and you come up with a training structure which is focused on enjoying your sitting meditation.
Sounds like a plan to me.
All right. Okay.
That's very helpful. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Celia.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Celia. And I'm going to bring out another caller here, Ashwini. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Bree.
Hi, Bree.
Oh, hey. What I've been aware of pretty recently is just how judgmental I am, and I'm kind of surprised. And I'm thinking, it's not like I'm suddenly judgmental. It's just that I'm hearing it. I'm hearing it. It's getting verbalized, whereas before it really wasn't. I'm sure there was a feeling tone somewhere about it, but it's being pretty prevalent right now. And I'm aware of it, and I'm also seeing at times connections between being irritated and judgmental.
Well, and yes, so with just a small change in the reflection, right, Bree? I mean, it's not, as long as you know that the I that's judgmental is ego, everything you said
mm-hmm.
is true. Ego
uh-huh.
is judgment. We don't have to be surprised by the fact that ego is judgment, because it is, right? And you're
that does
right.
make it different.
Sometimes,
that
yes,
does put
it
a different envelope around it.
That's exactly right. And you're right. As we practice more, we can hear
yes.
the judgment. And so then if
yeah.
we're not paying attention, it's going to accuse us of being more judgmental when actually it's just being revealed more often.
That's
so
exactly,
real,
yes, what I was picking up on. There's a reason I'm more aware of it now. There's a reason it's verbalizing and it's more present.
That's right. Or rather, you're more aware.
Or I'm more of the K. That's a nice way to say it.
It's as judgmental as ever. You're more aware
mm-hmm.
of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very, very, very interesting. Last thing, too, on this. I heard myself say earlier today, because I was really irritated with something, and I heard myself say, well, what do I do with irritation? Like, I need to do something, and yet I'm dovetailing to the conversations recently about getting out of the conversation about what's happening. What do you think?
Yes. Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. Because, so I project, here's what's happening, right? There's a stimulus, the
mm-hmm.
reaction, because the reaction is irritation, right? Ego doesn't like it, or ego
mm-hmm.
thinks there's something wrong with it, or it shouldn't be. There is enough presence to notice that. And then, of course, the attention goes to what do I do about it, which is the condition,
mm-hmm.
which is the next sticky on the process map, right? So there's something wrong with
uh-huh.
irritation. Let's fix the problem.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes,
right?
Definitely.
And then
definitely
something
that.
From practice drops into awareness, which says, well, how about getting out of the conversation? Because if you weren't in the conversation,
uh-huh.
you're not likely to be irritated.
Well, what that makes me pick up on from what you just said is by not getting involved with the conversation about it, it will just energetically move through. Is that correct?
Well, yes. Well, you'll have to find out, right? It depends
uh-huh,
on
right.
what level of identification
right.
and energy is involved. Mm. Because sometimes
yeah.
it's like, oh, God, and it's just an immediate reaction, and then we go, you know what, not worth thinking about it, and we move on
right.
to the next thing, right? And so that's why, so sure, a redirect of attention, which is not listening to the conversation, could easily
mm-hmm.
dissipate it in a second. Or if it's one of those karmic circuits that has deep
yes.
roots, the stimulus happens, the reaction happens, and then we keep feeding it, right? And then this, and then that, and I can't believe this, and now we're in major irritation, and it takes a lot more energy to redirect from that conversation. But you're absolutely right. If it's energetically, if we're just here for it, the energy rising and falling just passes.
Yeah. Yeah. One last thing on this, you know, the whole thing about the process is the same, the content changes. What I've been aware of in the last few days is, you know, there's different situations that irritation will come up around. It's still irritation. And how interesting it is, how creative that it's just, it will come up around so much everything. I mean, it will find a way to be irritated, right? It just It will find a way to be irritated.
Right. Or
funny in a way.
The process. It is. Yeah. It is funny once we're not the ones being, you know, ones identified with the irritation, right? So the different way of saying what you're saying is irritation is the process, looking for content to get irritated about.
Exactly.
And whatever the
Very
content
interesting.
Is, it's quite likely that it gets irritated.
Exactly. Yes. All right. Well, thanks very much. It's been very helpful. Okay.
Bye.
Thanks, Bree. And just briefly, I just want to say that it's just so exciting when we come upon those places of seeing that the, you know, that what we think is us or our judgment is really just conditioning, you know, like with a little hook out, just looking for something to hook onto, something, some piece of content, something that's up in our life, and that has nothing to do with the content or with us. It's just conditioning
that's
doing
right.
its thing.
That's exactly right. That it is conditioning doing its thing. And there are so many flavors of it's doing its thing, right, that we think is us, and it's such a powerful place in practice to get to disidentify and see it for what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Very exciting. All right, I'm going to try and get us at least one more caller here, Ashwini.
Mm-hmm.
Next caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hey, this is June in Georgia.
Hi, June.
Hi. And I'm going to be in Squim Monday.
Well, we're looking forward to it.
I know that you already know that. I'm just kind of excited about it. And
I mean, truly, June, we're all excited about it. I think this Sunday is our, we almost have 30 people on the property.
Oh, really? Wow.
I know. Isn't that, it's sort of like the peak. We had to add at least four more tents to our current tent so that we'll have place for everyone to sit.
Oh, my gosh.
Looks like the Winchester House with lots of additions.
Gosh, the mind goes into the future and pictures what things are going to be like. I had not pictured that. That's fabulous. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it? Yeah, it's just magnificent. It really is. And yeah, I think I was on the property the other day and just watching how all these people moving about weeding and putting tents up and weed eating and helping. And it's just so all of us in anticipation of this final crescendo of the summer of Sangha and the celebrating the guide's birthday that's coming up. Going to be a party. I'm so glad you're going to be here for it.
Yeah, me too. And two other pieces that I'd like to say. One is about recording and listening. And I made a commitment to record and listen. Not a specific number of times a day. I've always had real trouble with it. Okay, so make a commitment. I check in with someone, and And I've been doing it for, I don't know, at least a year, maybe more. Every day, recording at least four times, and often more than that. And the piece of it that I used to be able to pay lip service to, but have only just realized the power of, is what Tony was talking about doesn't matter what you record. Just record, you know, Sherry has said she records what she has for breakfast. And, you know, the mind would say, oh, well, that's so cute or something. I don't know. But I finally got it that the point is to record, because when that day comes or that moment comes, when there is something that I need the mentor for, then the access is so much easier than it used to be. You know, and
yes.
I'll go for days at a time and never record a single insight or pithy thing. You know, just what I'm doing and what happened today and who I saw and blah, blah, blah. But it's recording and it's talking to the mentor.
Well, and June, there's so much in what you're saying, right? I mean, I'll use a sports analogy because I know you love sports. But you want to convert every shot you make into the basket, you have to be making shots, right? You have to be practicing all the time. And it's the equivalent, right? So if I want to be alive and present to my life, being recording about, so there's several things about what you just said. If I want to make a shot, I have to practice making a shot. So if I want to record and listen and actually derive the benefit from recording and listening, I have to record and listen. What you practice is what you have. So I'm not going to be able to get the benefit if I don't do it every day, if I don't practice every day. And then the second thing you said, which was so important, is simply that the line about Sherry records what she had for breakfast, but she's not recording what she's having for breakfast. She's recording the joy of being alive in the moment. And it's our life that is the point, right? That we're living it, we're enjoying it, we're talking about it. It's the process of being alive to our lives, witnessing our lives, that's getting on the recorder.
Well,
and then what happens, go ahead. I just want to reflect the third point, that miraculously, when in those moments that we're talking about, I mean, it's a conversation we're having a lot about, which is nirvana is to be found in the middle of our lives. Right, it's not some abstract state that we get. So we get used to the ordinariness of the nirvana. What I had for breakfast, what I did today. Oh, I had such a wonderful time in painting class. Whatever, right? And then there is the curriculum of difficulty that life throws us. And then the wisdom, love, and compassion is right there, because I know how to do it. I know how to be here with it.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, what a practice success that for a year you've kept a commitment, no matter what.
No matter what. I'm going to be utterly truthful. One day, I did not record. It never crossed this mind. It never arose in awareness to record. But I that's fine. That's fine.
Oh, so, it's I don't know what they say in sports terms, June, but that would be a fabulous conversion percentage, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, June and Ashwin. I love that, everything about that conversation, especially that last piece there of like, you know, if I'm successful 364 out of 365 days, you know,
yeah.
conditioning finds some way to put the focus all
yeah.
on that one, right?
Yes.
And nobody gets the benefit, you know, from the eyes of conditioning for the 364 days, or the person showing up just to acknowledge that, not in a blame sort of way, but it's just like, that's actually what happened, just as information, you know, there's
yeah.
nothing wrong with that,
yeah.
but,
no.
you know, that's just what happened.
Yeah. yeah, yeah, that's wonderful. It really is. I mean, it's that thing we talk about all the time, changing the ability to talk about success and what's working rather than what's wrong.
Yeah, yeah. All right, and that brings us to the end of the show, Ashwini. And we will talk to more callers next week. Go happy.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Happy. Thank you, everybody.